welcome to Community Living Radio. I'm Michael, and with me, of course, is our new co-host, Allison.
Hello.
So today we are going to have a show with, I guess, Robin Wyman. So, Robin, are you there?
I'm here.
Hey. Okay. So we have with us live on the phone, Robin Wyman of the Circle of Life Center. And Robin, why don't you tell us a little bit about Circle of Life and what you're all about with that?
Okay, I'd love to. And I wanted to just say, Michael, thank you very much for having me today. It's a pleasure to be invited on, and I do love to talk about what I'm doing and educate people on beginning and end of life. But I'll just share what I do. Circle of Life, I developed that in 2015, and what I do is I support people who are going through very challenging transitions, and my specifically focus on beginning of life, end of life, and grief. So in beginning of life, I'll support women who are pregnant and after they've had the baby, and I support them emotionally and physically with issues that are going on because it can be quite challenging for new moms. And I also work with people at the end of life and their families, and a lot of times I'm finding a lot of my work is going into grief because people aren't processing as someone's passing, and we've got so many issues around end of life and death. So that's me in a nutshell, and I support people using holistic methods. So I use natural remedies, herbs, essential oils, and the flower essences. I do a lot of energy work with people, as well as coaching and talk therapy.
Cool. So, I always like to start off with the very beginnings of things, and how did you actually get started doing this? What's the story behind all this?
Well, we have to go back quite a few years in my life. I was 27 years old, and I was a mom of my child was 1 year old. I had a beautiful one-year-old boy. And what happened was my sister was diagnosed with a malignant brain tumor. And she was 23 at the time. And as you can imagine, it rocked our family to the core. And nobody knew how to cope or deal with anything. I mean, she fought very hard, and it was very challenging to see her go through what she went through. And she died 2 years later when she was 25. And I was 29 at the time. And 5 weeks after she died, I gave birth to my second child, little girl. So I'm not sure if you can imagine this or people can, but there was this sadness of my sister that was overwhelming, but this joy of this new baby, this beginnings and this endings, and it was just all a mesh together. It was very surreal, and this time when I think back about it, I would call it was bittersweet for me. So we just sort of were working our way through that, and I just say it's like a door open, because I'm not sure what went on, but the universe works how it works. And in the next 6 years, my aunt and uncle, both my grandmas, my mom, and a close family friend all died. And I also gave birth to my third child. So I was 36, and young mom. My kids were young. Mm-hmm. And I had, for me, it was both my grandmas, my mom, and my auntie. So these five women that were key women in my life, gone. And I was angry. I was struggling. I was mad at God. I didn't understand why this had happened to our family. And I wasn't coping very well. I had a lot of aches and pains. And, I knew I had to get it together because I had these three babies that gave me so much, well, they were children now, gave me so much joy. But I had this, I came later to learn that it's called layer cake grief. It was just grief upon grief upon grief. And I remember going to the doctor one day and completely falling apart. And her saying to me, Robin, we've got to help you. We'll get you on some antidepressants, and we'll give you pills to help you sleep. And I had horrible achy joints. And she said, we'll give you some anti-inflammatories. And something just bellowed up from me that said, no, you're not doing this. And so I listened to myself because, I had seen my family go into the hospital, and they had struggled and they had died. So I wasn't keen on doctors. They made me nervous. And I went, okay, universe, if there's a way, then show it to me. Mm-hmm. So I started to explore natural remedies. I started with herbs and essential oils, And I'd always done yoga and some meditation, but I really started to focus on this in my life, and I started to do a lot of walking in nature. I'd always loved nature, but I really started to spend time just quieting myself and listening, and I started to feel better, and I started to realize that I could heal myself, and I started to make these blends for my kids when they'd have a cold, or, you know, little remedies for things, for minor ailments, and it was empowering as a young woman to do this. So I decided to study. I decided to study all these holistic modalities, and one of the parts of aromatherapy when you study it is you do massage. So I was training in massage, and my teacher was very spiritual, and she said to me, Robin, you're very intuitive. I think that you would do well to learn Reiki. So I started to study Reiki, and part of what I did for many years was massage and energy work with people. So I could definitely have a feeling, and I can see where the energy is on the bodies, and people would start weeping when I was working on them and hug me after and say thank you so much. It's such more, so much more than a massage, but for me it was just this beautiful meditative dance where we would connect, and I realized that I was holding space for people and allowing the energies just to move through me. And then I evolved and studied sound and crystals, and I work with angels, and it just kept evolving. Then I kept doing that, and then I decided to create a center, because I thought, I want a place in nature where people can come and learn about the plants. And I created a wellness center and agritourism farm in Langley, which is about 45 minutes outside of Vancouver. Mm-hmm. And it had lavender fields and herbal gardens, and we did classes, and I had different holistic teachers come out, and we did fire ceremonies, and I had shamans come out, and we had different festivals and a lot of education. And I worked more with young moms and teaching them that, because they kept coming to me, and they'd say, Robin, how do you make all these natural products? How are you doing this? What's going on here? And I realized that generation had kind of been skipped of how to make things and do things. So I started to educate and teach people and mentor them. And I wasn't looking at the end of life. I had avoided that because I realized for myself I wasn't healed in that arena. Although I did do hospice work, and I did also do with my aromatherapy, I volunteered and I worked with people at the end of life. So I was doing it, but more on a volunteer aspect. And mm-hmm. It was in 2013 that I just share back after a moment that my husband and I were not getting along at the time. We weren't aligned in what we were doing, so we decided to separate and eventually divorce, and I wasn't able to hold on to the center. So the center went, the marriage went, and the home went, and I was looking after my great auntie, and she was in the process of end of life, and I was sitting with her as she was passing. And it was a very, very profound experience for me. And the nurse came up to me and she said, Robin, people don't do this. What, you know, and you have a calling to do this work. So I went traveling for a few years, and then I started to see different cultures and how they were handling end of life and death. And I decided to train. So I did conscious dying training, and I also did grief training. So I decided to study these modalities, and then I just evolved. It's been an evolution, and I realized the end-of-life work I couldn't do until I had really looked inside myself and worked through what I needed to do for myself so I could be strong enough to do this work, because it's challenging. It's a calling, for sure.
I was going to say, any time when you're helping people heal, that's one, it's a process for you, and two, it takes a lot of energy and strength to keep going with it, right?
It does.
So
it does. So that's me in a nutshell, Michael. It's a lot. I realize too, as my life going through, that I really have gone through a lot of highs and lows in my life, as we all do, but. I think I'm beginning to realize I'm quite an expert around grief. Yeah.
Well, that's an important thing that we need, of course, in this case, we're talking about grief in the sense of someone passing out of our life, But there's other, there's grief appears in many different ways in our lives and in very different times in our lives. So learning, having someone to help you get through that process is always valuable and important.
I would just like to share that for people going through transitions, a lot of you're leaving something that the way you used to be, and you're moving into something new, which is scary. Change is scary. It's scary. We don't we don't know what to expect, and it can often be quite messy. And I find with new moms, even a lot of times I've had them share that they said, "I miss my old life. I didn't, especially moms, you know, in the first few months, I didn't realize I'd be nursing all the time. I didn't realize that it was going to be so difficult." So there's a grieving of the old, even though you have this baby and life is so joyous. But this is something that women don't tend to talk about too much. And I find with me that this is coming up more and more for young moms.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I was going to say young parents in general.
Yes. Probably daddies too. Yeah.
Yeah, because there's parts of your life that you just simply have to leave behind, in order to attend to the new life. In a lot of respects, it's kind of a joyous in the end, but you're like, oh wait, I can't do that. Oh no, I can't do this. Right.
And a lot of people they're sleep deprived. They're overwhelmed. It can be a little isolating, and we don't have our core group around us like we would have had. And for me, I didn't have, you know, my mom was my kids were young kids when my mom died, so I didn't have that core women around me. And I see how important that is for women to have that community. And a lot of new moms don't have that support, and it can be very isolating, and they become very overwhelmed. And I was at a event out at UBC last week, and there was a lecture going on about new moms, and it was presented by a midwife who's a doctor out at UBC, and she was just saying the statistics of anxiety, stress, anxiety, and depression are higher than they realized for new mothers.
Yeah.
And they're just starting to look at this because it's not something that midwives and people are trained into, and doctors are trained in. So, and to nip things closer before it escalates into full-blown postpartum and depression.
Well,
it's a big issue that's starting to be addressed.
Okay, so about 20 years ago, I was introduced to not postpartum depression, but postpartum psychosis.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. My ex-wife completely went off the deep end with a lot of things. A lot of it had to do with how my daughter was born, with there was a unscheduled cesarean. And while, because if it had been an emergency cesarean, I wouldn't have been allowed in the room, period. But I was allowed in the room, so it was unscheduled then. And while they birthed my daughter, and the jokes in the room changed from goth jokes to, hey, how do we make someone's blood pressure drop like a stone?
Oh.
Now, I have a science background, so I decide to look at the blood pressure monitor that's hanging on the wall. And it's like, 195 over 195 is bad.
Right.
It's like, yeah. So with that, they were like, okay, baby's crying. Hey, can nurse, whatever her name was, can you escort baby and dad down the hall? So I was escorted out of the room while they worked on her blood pressure, getting it to come down. So yeah, So I think that was some of the things that actually started such a trauma to your body to begin with, because giving birth is one trauma, but then having that second trauma happen, I think that's what led her down that merry little path to postpartum psychosis. But she was one of they just started diagnosing it like 20 years ago when my daughter was born. before that, they were just like, oh, you just have to deal with it, and shuffled you off. So,
right.
So having, so my point in all that is having someone like you would have been really good.
Right, for support. I mean, yeah. I was with a woman the other day, a new mom, baby's a month old, and she says, I don't know whether I'm asleep or awake. And she's, I never knew. It's so sweet, right? Because we just, you know, I lighten up the mood, and I she said, I didn't know they'd beat all the time. So, and, you know, she's a first mom, so it's an experience. You have to go through it. People can tell you all what they want to tell you, but you have to physically go through that experience to know what that is.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's so important. And just as a backtrack, I just wanted to share with you, Michael, is my son was also a cesarean. My first child was a cesarean. Mm-hmm. And it was a very long labor. I was induced, and it was very painful and long. It was a couple of days. And then my blood pressure also dropped, and they just did an emergency C-section.
Yeah.
And then my son had swallowed meconium in utero, which is your poo,
oh,
his
yeah.
poo.
Yeah.
So they whisked him away. And, you know, I don't remember very much about his birth, and it was very, very challenging. People, you know, to not be able to be with your baby, and how I felt horrible, and it was very challenging. So I became very adamant for my next two children that I would deliver naturally, and I found a doctor that would allow me to try, and I did deliver both my daughters naturally, which was... that was a long time ago, so they didn't do, they're called VBACs, and VBACs means natural delivery after a cesarean, so I was a forerunner for that, too, because people just went, oh, I've had a cesarean, and it's a personal choice, I understand that, but I can see, it's very, very traumatic. It, like you said, birth is traumatic, the actually giving birth, but to have a C-section is a double whammy on you for trauma.
Yeah, My ex-wife had she went past preeclampsia to HELLP syndrome.
Wow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So with that, I'm going to take us off to a break, and when we come back, I'm going to give a phone number that everybody can text message questions to, and we'll come back with Robin, and maybe we'll have a couple text message questions midway through the next segment. Okay. So hang on.
Perfect.
And we're back. We're here with Robin Wyman of the Circle of Life Center, and our co-host, what is your name again? Allison Klein, that's right. So if you have any text message questions, you can text my phone at 778-389-6948, and we'll do our best to get some of those questions filtered through to Robin as we move along. Okay, Robin.
I'm here.
So we went through, there's some really beautiful things that happen at the time of birth, and then there's like some really, really scary things that can happen at the time of birth.
Yeah.
And we could go on and on about those stories, let's move forward with some of the child here, mom needs support. I should say young family needs support, because it's not always just mom that needs that support. Sometimes you might actually have to deal with the family as a whole, right?
Mm-hmm. So often, you know, the partners can sometimes struggle at different times, and you know, if they're not getting enough sleep, and for dads, it can be, I don't know what to do and how to help, because baby is nursed by mom, mom's caring for baby. Although I'm seeing a change, there's a lot of dads who are becoming, you know, they want to be involved. So I'm working with a woman who they. she pumps at night, so the daddy feeds the baby at night, and he likes to change the diapers when he's at home, and it's quite lovely. I think it, as time passes, I see a lot of young parents walking around, a lot of dads with young kids, just daddies with the young kids, and there's just more involvement. I think it's lovely, and I think that's just a change of the time for more involvement and women working more and just sort of that coming together. But definitely, you know, it's a change in your whole life, and people don't always know how to walk through it. And for me, what I do is I support people emotionally, physically, and mentally. I help them with their space. So I might do some, I teach people how to clear space and keep up, make your home that feeling very sacred for you. I mentor new mummies on how to make natural remedies for themselves and their families. And I'm really a proponent about using everything natural, getting all toxic and synthetics out of the home, because I think they do affect your health. And primarily the baby. So, and how to use these remedies for just, you know, if you're feeling a little funky in the morning, you could just use a little bit of, in a diffuser, a few drops of orange essential oil, especially in Vancouver. I mean, it's a beautiful day today, but, you know, we're going to get into that rainy, kind of funky weather that kind of makes people feel blah. And it just, using an orange oil in a few drops in a diffuser, it just lifts the mood. It's an antidepressant, and it just creates this calm feeling in the home. And this is what's so important, to have your home be your sanctuary and peaceful for you.
I know when I was a baby, my mom learned how to make her own baby food instead of giving me the stuff out of the jars.
Yeah.
And now I love yams and sweet potatoes.
That's great.
I know. I used to actually make baby food for my daughter. My son's not so much, because it just, other things were happening. My life was more on overwhelmed than with my daughter, who was my first. So I used to make all of her baby food.
It's, you know, I think we've really got on to the track that what we're putting in our bodies is so important. Mm-hmm. But I studied aromatherapy herbs. It's going on 20 years. So it's been a lot of education, kids, education, especially with essential oils, because we didn't really realize that our skin is the largest organ of our body. So what you're putting on your skin is going into your body as well. But I'm seeing that. There's a shift in that too in the last 5 years, to a lot more awareness around it. Although there's some concerns of how people are using oils specifically.
Well, oils, essential oils are the same as medications.
Yeah,
you can overdo it.
When you look at plants, you think of it as I sort of go in the spectrum. So you've got your vegetables. So they're your food. Then you go into herbs. So, you know, when you're making Italian food, you've got your thyme and your oregano. So you use those, and then you can move into more of your tincture. So they're just getting a bit more medicinal. Then you go all the way to the other spectrum, and that's where essential oils are, because they're chemical. They're the strongest part of the plant. You know, it takes one tea bag of peppermint is equal to. Oh no, one drop of peppermint, sorry, is equal to 35 peppermint tea bags.
Wow.
So they're so strong. So people have to use them with caution, understand dilution rates. Mm-hmm. And I'm not a big proponent of using essential oils for a newborn. I think they're too strong. So I would suggest something that's called a hydrosol. Excuse me. And a hydrosol, when you're distilling essential oils, when you're distilling the plant to make an essential oil, it's usually used by steam. There's other methods, but I'm just going to share steam right now. So you put a lot of plant material in, and you force steam into it, and then it condenses, it goes up along the tube, and then it comes into a container. And you'll have a lot of water, and at the top of the waters is a layer, and that's the essential oil. But these waters have so many, all the same chemical components, but it's very diluted. So I always suggest for people hydrosols for newborns and pets and seniors.
Yeah,
and people who are going through a, through a surgery and are in recovery. They're much gentler on the system.
I'm kind of familiar with the process. So we do have a text message statement from somebody.
Sure.
Somebody talking about their brother and an adoption process that he adopted. It's kind of off topic, but we'll get it out there. It's from Ben. He's talking about his brother who adopted a girl and how great of a dad he's trying to be. So,
that's
so, yeah.
Sweet.
But I think it's great that the guys are trying to. I know 20 years ago I was criticized for trying to be the involved dad, and I'm glad to see that there's less criticism around it and more involved dads. So
that's my dad
was so
involved.
Much healthier for the. Was your dad involved? Yeah, I think it's so much healthier for the baby to have both parents because you know you've got the feminine and you have the masculine. It's how do you model for a child? It's so important.
I'm 31, and my dad was fairly involved ever since I was born. So that he would put me down for bed at night. He would read me a bedtime story. He would dance with me when I was a toddler before bedtime. So seeing him like being involved in my life, I'm now expecting my significant other, if I ever find one, to do the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
It makes for so much richer for everybody to have this relationship.
Yeah.
You know, it's beautiful.
Yeah.
That's lovely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, me and your dad are probably about the same age.
Yeah.
Probably, yeah. Because, well, I had my first a little bit. I was over 30 when I had my first kid, so.
Yeah, both of my parents were over 30 when they had their me and I'm the first kid.
Yeah, so but it's good to see how our society is evolving around that. So what are some of the services you did the specific things that you would do for that new family?
So for you know, so I'll come in and I'll help, you know, at the beginning for moms, I'll help, you know, it's pain, they're in pain and they need to rest, so I'll come over and I'll help them. I can help them with, you know, what do you need me to do in the home, and you know there's quite a bit of I'm unsure, a lot of insurety, so just helping support them, because we know, you know, everything instinctively, we know, we just sometimes need guidance. So really I call myself the mother's mother, because so many mummies don't have a mom around them. So that's, I come in and I'll just support them however they need to be supported. And so it may be the baby's not nursing or baby's waking up every hour and a half. So I teach them how to, because so often moms will nurse the baby on one breast and then they fall asleep. And then I'll say, no, let's wake the baby up again and nurse on the other side. So the baby's fuller, so they'll have more extended time of that before they have to nurse again. Because exhaustion is huge. And, you know, I teach them how to ask for what they need, because so many people don't ask for what they need. And I did a blog art. I wrote a blog on that. So if anybody's interested, they can go to my website and have a read of that. So, you know, I'm saying, what do you need your friends to do? Do you need someone to just come over and bring some meals? Ask them. Do you need someone to come over and maybe clean your house for you? It's okay. People want to help, but they are unsure what to do today.
Yeah.
We tiptoe around things. I find that in end of life too, and grieving, people we're just unsure what to help and how to help. So I help with that. Quite often I'll make blends for the mom, so you know, to heal after the late after birth. So we'll make some things, and then also some oils to use to help with the uterus. How are they feeling? Are they sleeping well? So I do things for them. I make teas. Okay, so let's teas that can help with lower stress and help you feel sleepier. And then I'll help them with their home.
Yeah.
And really, for me, it's creating that safe space in your home and feeling confident. And it is a process. That first month, 6 weeks, 2 months of having a newborn it's just change, massive change for you.
Yeah. So if you want to get to Robin's blog. It is Circle of Life Center. And because we're in Canada, for those of you listening in the U.S., please change the R and E around, .ca, and it's /blog. And you'll see the menu choices across the top either way. So, and it's, you have a lot of blog posts there around this topic matter. So,
yeah, it's called Ask for What You Need, because I see that people don't know what I want. People aren't understanding me. These are things people I'm working with are saying all the time. But, you know, even in life, you have to ask. You have to let people know what you need.
Yeah, well, that goes with anything.
I know.
It's like, I know somewhere along the line, I think we're told if you ask specifically what you need, that you're a greedy and hurtful person. And somewhere along the line, I think we're taught that, and that's absolutely not true.
Yeah, we got to clear that one out.
Yeah,
that's a belief
yeah.
that's not true at all. Want to help.
Yeah, should we debunk that right now? It's like,
yes.
Be specific and ask for what you need, and guess what happens?
You get things.
You get it.
And you know, you need to lighten. We need to lighten our load. We've got this. I can do it. I see this a lot. I can suffer through this if I just hold on. I can do it. And you know, we suffer, and we're in pain, and then everything can spiral. And
Yeah.
You go down that rabbit hole, and it's hard to get out of it. It's hard.
Well, you know what? And I think that some of it haven't. The guy just been divorced a few times. I think that some of that non-communication about what our needs are leads to larger, more hurtful miscommunications.
Sometimes I'll work with a couple, and they're having intimacy issues. So we'll just, and it's really about communicating that, what's going on. You know, so much, and kindly. When I did, you know, I've always done, I've done healing work for so many years. And when I did my grief training, I was taught by a psychotherapist. And I just want to share this, because she said that when we were in, I did it, and a lot of times we were on a Zoom call, the group, and then we would have question and answer, and she said, when you're with people in a group, you will behave as you did with your original family. So specifically, I just want to share, at end of life, if someone's coming to the end of their life, often the family will come together and will play out the unresolved issues and the roles that we did as children and parents in the family, with the family dynamics. And she taught us always to communicate, and that if somebody in our group was irritating us or we were feeling a charge, to communicate that back to them. So it was a really good healing process for all of us in the group, as well as communicating in a kind, thoughtful way with someone. Instead of, you're pissing me off because you're doing this, it's just that you could say, I'm feeling upset right now from what you said, and can we discuss it? There's a much different way in how you communicate that with someone.
You know, you know the thing that I remember this as a kid. They used to tell you that if you got angry, to count to 10, right? And it would pass. Well, I always put it this way: count to 10, and while you're counting to 10, think about how you can state something in a loving manner, as opposed to the hurtful manner that they may just popped up as. And then state it.
That's beautiful. So
be loving about it.
It's taking that pause instead of just reaction, right? Because most of us are shoot, ready, aim. And we're throwing energy or throwing it at somebody or repressing it in ourselves all day long. And when we just take a moment and just come to our center and just go, okay, I'm triggered now, but why am I triggered? And just how can I express myself exactly how you said, in a loving way?
Yeah.
So it's not painful, because we see how things escalate. And you know, at times of birth and death, things are already raw and we're vulnerable and it's so heightened. And if something can go, a remark or something said can it can go sideways very, very, very quickly.
Yeah. Next thing you know, you're standing in front of it. it really can go this way. Next thing you know, you're standing in front of a judge, and you're splitting property. It really can go that far. It sounds like a joke, but it really could go that far. Okay, so let's bounce off to a break, and then we'll come back and work in our final segment, because we did get your website in there. Let's talk about what you do for people to help them with end of life.
Okay.
Okay? All right, sure. We'll be right back.
Hi, and we're back at CFRO 100.5 co-op radio. No, I forgot one.
That's okay. You're listening to Community Living Radio here, and we're speaking with Robin from the from the Circle of Life Center, and that is circleoflifecenter.ca. And for our American friends, remember to switch the R and E around in center, and you will find Robin. So, Robin, we did a lot about the beginning of life and how you help new families and all that kind of stuff. I guess we do need to, even for the last few minutes here, talk about how do you help people when it comes down to the end of life?
Well, I work with people. I like to teach people about even just preparing and family members. I tend to not work so much with somebody who's the actual person that's dying or at the point of death, although I'm very capable to do so. But I haven't found that so much. I tend to work more with families, and I think that's because of what happened in my family. We just didn't have the skills to be able to cope with all the deaths that were going on. So we kind of fell apart as a family. And I always go, I don't want that to happen to others. And I have this gift, I call it one of my gifts, is I can see energetically what's going on with the family members and help them communicate in a more healthy way and deal with their issues so that they can be there and be there for their loved one who's dying, because that's what it's about. But all these unresolved things mm-hmm. come up. So that's primarily how I work. I also I like to teach people about preparing, like thinking about, you know, doing a life review and looking at where you've got some unresolved issues, and helping people with forgiveness work, and looking about, you know, I was working with a woman the other day whose parents are aging. So she was asking me, we haven't talked about this, but their health isn't well. Her parents live in another country. So she was saying, what can I do to support them? So we were talking about, you know, do they have things in the home, like bars to help them up, or do they, you know, I said, check their feet. Feet are huge for seniors, because when you have feet problems, then there's a chance of falling, and falling is a major thing for seniors that causes that downward spiral. Mm-hmm. And then I said, you know, have you talked to your mom and dad about what their wishes are? I mean, do they want to be buried? Or do they want to be cremated? Where would they like to have their ashes kept? And she said, we haven't talked about any of this. So we just had a really good conversation around that. So I'm very open to talking to people about that. And I usually find it's the woman who will come to me, usually who's in the caregiver role, she's got aging parents and children, so, and maybe grandchildren. So she's that sandwich generation.
Yeah.
And I also work with a lot with grief.
Yeah.
Grief.
Well, we had a couple episodes ago, we had Rebecca Smith on from Surrey Hospice, and she was talking about all the different services they have with palliative care and things like that. You know, but one of the areas that they said that they actually do struggle in is, that's great for the person who's leaving, but what about the person, the family that's staying, right?
Right. So all the attention tends to go to the, and of course it should be the whole family,
right?
That struggles.
Yeah.
And then the person died. And, you know, I just want to share, we are death phobic in the West. We have sanitized everything. And, you know, years ago, you would have died at home. You would have been in your home. Your family would have been around you. You know, you would have been, you would have smelt the smells. The kids would have been running around and screaming and laughing and crying. Now we're put into places that, well, a lot of people are choosing to stay at home now. So there's a shift there, too. But, you know, we've sanitized it. It goes off to the hospital. They can do it, deal with it. I'll pop in or pop out. Or some people don't even want to go and don't go. And even in the senior residences, and then the funeral services, they'd handle the funeral, and then at the end we're just like, oh, because we weren't involved in any of the process. And I feel personally this is why people struggle a lot, because we don't discuss it. You know, death is messy, it's painful, but we're all going to go through it. I'd like to speak
you
more
can't get out of
it.
This. You can't get it out of this alive, can you?
I know. No, we can't. But we're anti-aging everything in our world, right? Like, it's like there's this pretend that, oh, that's not good. You know, I always call it the elephant in the room, and I do a talk about that for people. It's, you know, just unveiling and like uncovering this, and just starting a dialogue around it.
You're right.
I know with one of my friends. Her mom was passing on and was at palliative at VGH. So my mom and I would go and visit the mom and check up on not only the mom, but our family friend, which
Good.
Was nice.
Right. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
People struggle. They really struggle. Because it brings up not only the death of their loved one, usually, and even they may be mad at them. They have maybe not talked for years. You know, you don't know. There's so much that comes up at death. And we also are afraid to look at our own, as I just said. So it's all about our own mortality. That's coming up for us, too.
Yeah. An incident here at the station a while ago, and it was kind of how do we all have to deal with it? And we came together as a family here at the station because one of our own he died in the bathroom. He died I think it was like maybe
it was
three or four hours before I came on air.
Yeah.
And and one of our other broadcasters found him in the bathroom. He died. So it became a topic of talk of amongst ourselves. We didn't broadcast anything about it because the family asked us not to actually broadcast anything about his passing. So we didn't broadcast anything, but we all had to deal with the fact that he's gone, you know. So and we all had to do it in our own little way. So.
Right, and I, you know, I'm glad you. That there's the process that you come together as a group and you talk and you work and you heal through that because that's a traumatic event that happened. Right,
yeah.
That's very traumatic.
Yeah.
You know, there people. Not every death is beautiful, laying in a bed with your family surrounded you and hugging and in love. It would be beautiful if it was, but it isn't. There's many different ways people die, and there's a lot of emotional issues around that for people, you know, whether they can be feeling guilty that they weren't there, or they're angry that they've gone. I was angry at my mom, really angry at my mom. Felt abandoned, and they may feel abandoned. They may feel resentment. There could be guilt that I should have been there. I should have done something, or shame.
Mm-hmm. Right?
It's a complex. Grief is complex. It's very complex,
yeah.
And people don't like to deal with it. So they'll use substance or recreational drugs or prescription drugs or other ways to medicate, but these don't solve the problem. Grief is very patient. It will wait for you until you're ready to deal with it.
Oh, that's very true. You know, my wife and I, we've had to deal with a couple of deaths, my wife helped me get through the fact that my my stepdad had passed away. They lived back in the U.S. and I wasn't able to get out there. But my mom did tell me that the whole process for him, that the whole family was able to be there in a room with him, and my stepsisters, they were angry. It was like, well, they thought that my mom should have done more to save his life. Mm-hmm. And yeah. there wasn't any way to, you know, yeah, they could have did another surgery or something like that, but the doctors just said why would we do another surgery when there's like a 5% chance that he would that. There's only a 5% chance of him coming out of it alive. 95% chance he's going to die on the table anyway. Right. So why? Let's let him be comfortable and pass it easily, you know. And it kind of formed it formed two camps, you know. It's like there's me, my mom, and my sisters, and then my stepsisters and my stepfather's family. Separate camps now over that. Because they're so upset.
It can divide families. And mm-hmm. it's very painful to see, but I see this a lot. So for them, they wanted their dad to be kept alive at all costs because they couldn't accept saying goodbye. And I want to tell you, the person who's dying, they need to hear that it's okay to go. It's huge. People will stay and hold on and suffer so much, needlessly, because they're holding on for family that can't say it's okay.
You add something in there. I'm with you on this. Okay, understand that. But there's people out there that say, "Oh, that's bunk."
I know, but then that's not who I work with, right? I'm very alternative in my way, and I work, you know, I work with people using natural methods, and I use energy work with people, so I'm not going to be a fit for everybody. And I listen to people and I let them share, but I also am very direct. And you know, I think I'm myself like a mom. Like sometimes it's gentle, and sometimes it's okay, that's enough now, we're going to deal with this way. And I'll guide them to shift. So I'm not a fit for everybody, but I definitely I don't take a lot of BS from people when they want to stay in there wallowing with stuff. I mean I allow that, but let's move you out of that, because where is that getting you? It's not
right.
So for your family, I don't know how things have unfolded for your family. I'll pray for them to come back together, but I see this a lot with people. There's just this division of, or you know, one, the eldest son is going to decide everything, and then the caregiver's the baby of the family, and there's this push and pull going on between the family members. We're an interesting, the human condition is very interesting. The more I learn and explore with it. Yeah. And in these heightened times of birth and death and really challenging transitions in your life, you could say divorce or retirement or, you know, being, you know, any of these majors in your life cause us to really reflect and look at our life, because change isn't always easy.
No, change isn't always easy at all. A lot of times, most of us wind up going through change kicking and screaming.
It's very true. And if we could actually see change coming and meet it, it would make things easier for us. It's easier to meet change than have change forced upon you.
Yeah. Okay. So we're getting down to our final 5 minutes here. So I want to make sure before we continue any further, I want to make sure that the best ways of getting a hold of you and your center.
Yes. Do you want me to tell you?
Yes, please.
Okay.
That was a question. Sorry.
Okay. I'll tell you. So they can contact me at Circle of Life Center. And center is spelled C-E-N-T-R-E, and that's .ca. So Circle of Life Center circleoflifecenter.ca. And they can also email robin@circleoflifecenter.ca, or they can phone me at 604-341-3345. And I offer a complimentary discussion with you, and usually it takes about half an hour, 45 minutes, and mm-hmm. we just sort of evaluate. We just talk about what's going on, what your struggles are, and then we go back and forth, and then we decide if I could be a fit for you, because sometimes it's not a fit, and I'm very aware of that too. Mm-hmm. So, and it may be that you just need some help with some. I make birth kits for mummies, so in labor who choose to do a more natural route. So maybe they would want to call me for that. Or I sometimes custom blend for people who are going through some challenges too. So I basically do one-on-one, but I'm starting to expand into some other areas too.
Cool.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. So that brings me to how we actually met. Actually a group setting. Wait, I gave the talk that day, didn't I? You had to deal with me actually standing on stage and talking. Oh, my God. No, with that, I'm going to get let me give a couple gratitude statements to Diane Hume, who, if it wasn't for her, we wouldn't have met and we wouldn't have you on our show today, with Dream Receivers Academy. And also to Paula Scaper from Kinetics Media, whose video studio we had the event in.
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
They both are very beautiful women doing important work and helping people move through their muck so they can shine brilliantly.
Yes.
Right? And live the life that we came to live. So yeah. Beautiful. Diane's work's beautiful.
Yeah.
Very grateful to her.
Yeah. She's a wonderful lady and good friend and everything. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay. So, Robin, it's been nice speaking with you today. I know that you said, you told me yesterday when I confirmed this, that you're off on a whirlwind trip to somewhere. So I know you need to jump off and go finish preparing for your trip, because your flight's leaving shortly, right?
It is. I'm going this afternoon. So thank you very much, Michael. I really appreciate it. And I'm sorry, I don't know the interviewer's name.
Allison,
it's been a pleasure to have a chat with you too.
Thank you so much, Robin.
Okay. Thank you, and enjoy your day. And remember, today is Remembrance Day, everybody. So, you know, just reflect on some. You know, if you've lost someone in your life, or you're separated from someone in your life, then just send them some love and a prayer.
Prayers are very important.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes. Okay.
For sure.
And thank you. And we will talk to you later when you get back.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
Okay. You too. Bye.
Bye.
So, that was Robin, and that's about all we have for today. So, keep listening to your local station if you're listening to CITR, CHLY, or here on Co-op Radio, CFR 100.5 FM. Keep listening to the programming, and please remember to support all of your independent programmers with donations and memberships so that we can keep this programming going. Okay? Thank you. Bye.
Bye.